You're listening to a Nerdy Production.
Warning, this is a Nerdy Production.
This is the Solo Workshop, where I will dive into some of my favorite games in my time as a GM, look at the games and why I played the games. The Solo Workshop will also be on the YouTube channel, so you can see art from the game I'm presenting each week. Roll for initiative! Welcome to the GM Workshop, a solo GM Workshop. Today, three weeks ago, I promised you that I would make a Vampire the Masquerade because that was one of my peak games in the beginning of my role-playing career. But I didn't make it until now, and I'm sorry, of course. But that is what it is. And so, with me today, I have Lars to help me. So. Today it's not the solo GM workshop, it's the dual GM workshop, Lars, and thanks for helping me with this project.
I'm glad I can help with it. Let's see what where we will end with it.
Yeah. So first of all, we will talk, of course, about Vampire the Masquerade. We can also touch on other World of Darkness stuff, but the primary is World of Darkness we want to dive into today. And Vampire the Masquerade is, It's one of my favorite games at all times, and Vampire the Masquerade is created by Mark Rainhagen, and released the first time in 1991 by White Wolf Publishing. And it's about in the storyline of the World of Darkness setting, where we play in this gothic punk version of our own world, and a lot of stuff made after that point, but one of the key pivots for me was, of course, the iconic green book with the rose in the cover. The second edition book was the first one I picked up back then, and was, it was read and used until the cover fell off, and I still have it on my shelf here, and it's still a dear property of mine. So, the kindred and the vampire and all that stuff, Lars. Let's dive into it because we have a lot on our schedule today. So what is your history on this game and when did you pick it up and how did you pick it up?
Well, one of my friends picked it up in the early 90s. I think it was 92 or something when the second edition has been released. And he asked me if I want to play with him together with some other friends. And at first I think, okay, I'm fresh. Let's do this. Play this game. It looks different or sounds different than what we knew. We played at that time. At that time we played Star Wars Western games and some Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. So when I just began to get an idea what it was like a game changer. More than one word for me, because both the system was very different and it appealed mostly for what we can call players who like the story and not that much the game, the system, role-playing systems. So for me, it was a thing that said, whoa. It awakened me in some way for what I really want role-playing to be. So for me, it was a game changer.
Yeah, when I picked up this game, I played a lot of Dungeons & Dragons, as you did, and it was actually my former GM that had this game, and he just bought it, and he actually didn't know how to play it, really, and we tried to run a short game because our normal D&D session was cancelled of some sort, so we were only two players and the GM, and it was just me as a brute, and the other one was a woman played Malkavian, I think, and it was just brute forcing some dude, and then we suddenly sprung into a lair with some werewolves and we died, and I can't remember all the details, but it wasn't vampire as it should have been. So I borrowed the book and then I ran it with my other group as a GM, and it was a bit less violent, but it was still more like Dungeons & Dragons in a soup in a mall, for most cases. So yeah, it was hard for me in the beginning to see what the game should do. Did you experience any of this, Lars? And because for me it was hard for me to see as a player coming from the D&D and the Western games scene and picking up this game and what the difference was with from those games where action was the primary thing and there was a lot of abilities, a lot of clans, and a lot of archetypes in back of the book that gave us a picture of these monsters that can tear people apart. Why didn't we want to play that? But actually the game wasn't about that. It was about feelings and loss and all these things. How did you manage to grapple with that difference between the real Dungeons & Dragons-ish games and this game?
Well, I have no problems with the classic Dungeons & Dragons, Dungeon Crawl in that way. But when I was introduced for Vampire the Masquerade 2nd Edition, and my storyteller, as it is called in Vampire, really helped me emerge into the World of Darkness setting. And as I said before, it was a total game changer for me as a role player. He made a story where he told the story from when I was a child to adulthood and to my first embrace. And there was no dice rolling in that session. I think we were playing one evening or something like that. It was after I was embraced that we were going to use dice. And the process for my birth, my character's birth to the embrace, what I can remember is was just like yesterday. I got pictures in my mind of where I can remember how he told some of the scenes and what I did with my character. So it was like, you know, when you have memories from many years back and they just stand 100% clear in your mind. Or you tell yourself it is 100% in your mind. And I can just, if I sit down now, I think I can remember most of this session. And for that on, I was in love with the storyteller system and World of Darkness. So
because when you pick up the book, this is not what the... what you explained there is not what the game wants a GM or a storyteller to do with a playgroup. That was your GM that makes some version of it that was much better and much more detailed and grabbed you by the throat for sure and make sure that you were hooked to this form of role playing, because when you pick up the book, just in a vacuum, this is just a normal RPG, but there's so many things implicit in the text and in the way that the system is built up and in the clans and the conflicts within these that it's hard to see for me where if you have a less better GM than you had, you might be confused and what this system and what this setting will do, and that was my experience with it at the first time.
Mm. But it is I'm a little puzzled about it because, no, not puzzled, but my GM was a classical Dungeons & Dragons GM, and he was GM in Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. It was just like every other GM, I would say. So it's a normal dungeon crawl, not something about emotions or something. But what I thought that Vampire did for me and for other players and GMs was that it helped them be better, not better maybe, but made more immersive system storytelling. So where I normally saw him as a classic GM, he was, when he used Storyteller or Vampire the Masquerade, it was, in my opinion, a lot better experience.
So
I thought that it was something about the setting and maybe also a little about the system that helped him be a better GM.
Yeah, because the system is one of the old jokes in Denmark that this game was for women because they have to count the dots. It was a bad joke, but it's something that resonates with me that the system wasn't that important, and for it's so easy. It's pretty difficult in some other parts, but that's a part where it's up to the GM, and the rule mastery for the GM is actually where it's hard. It's the rule mastery for the players is not that hard, and that's one of my love with this system, that if I understand the system as a GM, my players don't have to understand the system as much. They just have to roll their dice pool and get sixes or above, whatever. It's cool. What was your experience when picking up this system at the first time, Lars, and what was your thoughts about it?
Well, I think that it was very intuitively for me. It was so easy to get into compared to other role-playing games at that time. And it is a large topic to talk about different men and women's different approaches to role-playing. But it, I think that the system helped new players to get into role-playing.
Yeah, for sure.
New persons to get into role-playing. It appeals to... also to women, I think, more than most of the other games before, but it also appealed to people who are maybe for some subcultures like goth culture and or different new types of role players.
Yeah, for sure.
And when the system was so simple in the start, it was easier to get into the game compared to maybe Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, something that. But I will also say that when we talk about Vampire or Storyteller, the system was like over the years mutated and become very difficult. Mm-hmm. So I think in the late 90s and later on, the system was very, I would say, very crunchy in some ways. So, but in the start, it was very simple. Yeah. And I think when the system became more and more complex, there were more and more players who did not want to play it, but I don't know if that was a reason or it was just a hype that disappeared. But that was my experience.
Yeah, of course. And Interview with a Vampire and Rise and the Vampire wave in the 90s was of course a engine for this game for sure. And as you said, women were especially in our community in Copenhagen where we come from, Lars, we had a lot more female players than male players playing this game, in contrast to AD&D or GURPS or whatever other systems we have in that area.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I love to play with all kind of people, but it was fun to see that the women were drawn to this game in another, because. Yeah, a vampire is more sexier than a dwarf, smelly dwarf in a tavern. It's more relatable. It's more it's contemporary. It's easier to relate to. It's sexy. It's not about how to kill goblins in a dungeon. It's how to charm the prince of the city. It's much more intrigues. It did draw a lot more. To this game for sure, not to have a big analyst talk about genders and sex, but it was one of my big wows in this time for sure, and we have a lot of common friends, and most of them started playing this game.
I think people at our age who played role playing game was most of them played Vampire at that time.
Yes.
It was very hyped, mm-hmm. but also compared to other games, I think it with good reason. It was, for many ways, it was more interesting to play because, as you said before, it was more you could better relate to the setting. Mm-hmm. Than most fantasy settings, and it was not about if you have blue colored hair or you have horns or you have some kind of magical order. It was not about that. It was more about things you could relate to, maybe a relation to your parents or the city you lived in or something like that. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I think it also helped players to emerge into the story.
So when you picked up this game as a GM, alas, what can you give us a outlet? Isn't it? It's one of the best experiences for you in this game. I know you played a long campaign in the Dark Ages Vampire Decade. That's something else than normal Vampire the Masquerade for sure. But it's relatable, of course, because it's. I know you played a lot of Azumite campaign, right? If I recall.
A long
campaign with some guys. We are common. We know both of us and. But did you play any Vampire the Masquerade in some contemporary some shorter campaigns or in notable scenarios?
Well, first of all, I played so many World of Darkness scenarios and campaigns through the years, so I cannot remember them all. But I played also all the other different kinds of storytelling things like Werewolf, Mage, and all the different kinds of there. But yes, my longest campaign was, I think it took 7.5 years to play. Mm-hmm. And I'm normally not into long campaigns, but this one could not die. Yeah.
and they were vampires, so of course they couldn't die.
They were vampires. And it started, I think, around the year 800 after Christ in Baghdad, in what we call Iraq today, where the Muslim Caliphate was very strong, and we followed the characters for the next 400 years, and then they died. Under the streets of Damascus, where they was thrown into an organ pit of something called Barley's bloodline. Yeah. So it was a very dark ending, but we had many, many great experiences through the years, where for many hours I could just sit back and my players could talk to each other with some different topics when we're sitting in some haven in Baghdad and discussing something, so especially in the start of the campaign. So I think when I gave it a lot of time, and it took also a lot of years to play. So that was a great, great journey. But again, I will say that probably my best vampire experience have been shorter campaigns or scenarios that only took a day to play.
Because it's weird, this game, because it's actually pretty good for campaign gaming, because it's, vampires live forever kind of thing. But it's, when we play the contemporary, it's more these intense intrigue power play scenarios where we set our players into a context where they have to navigate very sharply, or maybe use violence, or maybe use manipulation to navigate through this web of troubles they are thrown into, and that are not very suitable for a longer campaign. From my view, that's not my experience. That's like shorter campaigns where we run a lot of games. I know I ran a lot of games with one of our favorite common friends called Ulrich back in the days, where we, after the TV show Kindred the Embrace, if you can remember, that's a TV show, and we that was it was very bad and very but they had some key nice moments, and there was so little vampire things in the pop culture, so that was a lot of draw from to have some visual things that work with, and it was resorted a few years ago, and damn it, it's bad, and it's using the Bram Stoker Dracula soundtrack. It's so funny. I was about to fall down on my sofa when I heard, was like, why are you using the Bram Stoker Dracula soundtrack.
Well, that's a great soundtrack.
Yeah, for sure. But that's
a strange.
That should be somebody sue them for that, because that's something that's serious. But so we played a lot of that genre where it was some, like, short scenarios where there were some power plays and blah blah blah, and the clans were fighting them between the clans. Like, it was fun. But the one specific shorter campaign I ran was in Tostrup with was us also one of the person, you know, Dieter, and some other of that crew, and I played in a small role playing club in Tostrup, where Dieter were a very beautiful woman, and she were suited up with some very for lack of other words, slutty clothing to make it more in-game thing. And one of the other players did the same, one called Tina. And the two other players were landed some Nazi uniforms, because we were playing an alternative universe where the Germans have won the war. And they were playing vampires in this community. And one of my players had access to a lot of Nazi memorabilia, because his grandfather was a rebel in the Second World War, and they have these suits on and this clothing on, and it was fun to see that the all in gaming for my players in this setting I have created for them, and it was pretty cool to see them go all in. And the other thing we have in common, Lars, we have played a lot of live LARPing in the Vampire, where it was very easy for players to play LARP, and was some of our first experience with the Vampire, for sure.
Yeah, we have in Copenhagen. Yeah. There have been on all over Denmark.
Yeah, all over
there have
Denmark.
Been in crowd Vampire the Masquerade, where we walked between normal people, non-player characters,
NPCs,
and we used the environment for the game.
Yeah.
And I think I have some great experience there. Mm. Of course, there's also the difficulties. I have some good locations.
Yeah.
But I can remember good experience with it.
Sure.
Yeah,
it was crazy. Crazy times back in the 90s for sure. So so when looking at this game, we've talked a bit about it. It's about like moving from combat to intrigues. And when you're looking at these experience with the game, Lars, have you any thoughts, deeper thoughts about it when you're looking back on the games? Do you want to play in other things, or did you want to do something else in the game?
Yeah, I think that I am nowadays not fed up about Vampire, but I have played it so much that in some way it will not be the first thing that I will look for.
No.
I will can look back at it and say they have some great experience, and what I have done otherwise. I will not have made my campaign that took 7.5 years take so long. I will now I will have made a story where it was a little more clear where it will end.
Yeah.
And where I will say, okay, when after maybe 20 sessions, something like that, it will end.
No.
And there will be some kind of climax or something that will give some meaning for the clear characters.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I will do more now. I will structure my my stories a lot better than I've used to. But that's not Vampire's fault.
No.
It's my
it's
better now.
Yeah, it's like I bullied one of my friends about the game. He was like gung ho on getting every clan book and every supplement of this, and I just said, we have just have to use the ground, the core book, that nothing else. And he also, and I teased him about it, and he was right. We need all these books to play this game. And it was it's weird when we were on conventions. We have just been on a convention here for a month ago, the two of us, the annual Viking Con. And there's a lot of shops there where they have a lot of books, and back in the days there was a lot more. And that was the place to pick these rare clan books or these weird supplements that was White Wolf was pumping out in this area.
To be honest, as I will say that, in my opinion, the first clan books were not that great, but later on there was released some extremely good books, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But it was also because the World's Darkness setting was one of the reasons that I really love playing Vampire. Yeah. For people now, the idea that there should be vampires living in a society in some kind of setting is nothing new. But it come from Anne Rice or something like that and emerged into Vampire. But at that time, it was new for most players.
Yeah.
There was these creatures living in our world, and that appealed extremely much to me. I think it was so great idea, but also that they expanded so much the universe with so many details, so many interesting lore, that it was just like, oh, great idea, and how can I use this something about ancient history that where something has happened and you can still see it in our society now, where some powers are still fighting this fight or something like that.
Yeah.
And it appealed so much to me. And you could read that in those books.
Yeah.
You could get some insight and say, oh, okay, this I can use as a kind of secret that maybe my characters will resolve in some way. And in that way, I also think that the lore in all those books was so interesting and so great to use. So I want those books, and I got a lot of them from the different kinds of World of Darkness, Werewolf, Vampire, Mage, and all that.
Yeah.
And I think there was so many great ideas. So for me, I did not necessarily use it, but I liked to read them.
Mm-hmm. They were great works, for sure. And one of the key, maybe we should clarify what a vampire is in this universe, maybe to backtrack a bit, but because vampires in this universe is it's linked up to the Christian faith, actually, and something with the Cain and the first vampires, and there is some link from Cain, like the first one, the first generation of vampire, the first creation, and he created some vampires, and then they created some vampires, and linking up the generations up to vampires. And the, I think in the back in the days, 13th generation was the cap for vampires. If you moved into the 14th, you were not really a vampire anymore, and you cannot be embraced or be created as a vampire. So that's, they're linked into the Christian, the Christian faith, or the monotheistic faith of Judaism or whatever.
It's a very deep history with a lot of roots into our ancient history, and yes, it follows some kind of biblical Hebrew tradition or mythos or what you would call it. Where Cain is the first vampire, if you follow the law.
Some of the law,
because in the start of the books, when they first come out, it was not that clear.
Nope.
It was not like you often hear someone in the books saying that they have found some text that Cain should be the first vampire, but it was not like it stands in as an objective truth. It was more like, you can use this as a story tool if you want to.
Yeah, and
or there can be some other truths to it.
Yeah,
but later on, it was more clear. Cain is the first vampire, and then there come the seconds and the thirds, and then on, and we have the names for all of them.
Real, what a 13th generation Brujah in Central Park, New York, he doesn't care who were he was his predecessor 5,000 years ago. That's not important for the character's build up. So for me, it wasn't important for the players to know this. And there were created a lot of like a lore, as you said, a lot of mythical build up around this where the books moved on, especially when we moved back in the Dark Ages where you were playing a lot. You had a lot of lore surrounding these vampires, and
at the same time, players, my players, and now I will say some words here, were suckers for the lore. Really want the lore. They want to have characters who have a lot of dots in lore, so they can tell the stories about King and the ancient vampires. But I will follow you 100%, that I think what was really Vampire's strongest side was when you just played a 13th generation or 10th generation vampire running around in some city and trying to find some blood and or make some relations or maybe get into a plot with the local prince or something like that. It was not that you could not play these stories about the ancient things in the vampire mythos, but I think it was originally not designed for that.
Yeah.
It was more about the local things.
Yes. It was, and also because vampires as such is very local, because you cannot move around as much because you die if you go out in the sunlight, so you cannot drive across USA, for instance. It's much more local centric games you are creating as a DM and as a player. You have to recognize this, and you have to figure out how to coexist with the other vampires in your surroundings. So you cannot kill them all. There's like And on top of that, there's the Camarilla and the Anarchs and the Sabbat is the last one. There's these three big fractions that we have to navigate in through the players. And in the first couple of books and the first thing you play in this setting, you are playing the Camarilla vampires, the seven clans in that regards. It was seven, right? I can't remember. So seven, yeah, yes. And they have very strict rules, so you cannot attack another vampire. So the game setting have created these boundaries for the players, so they cannot attack. So you have to solve your problems in other ways through intrigue or manipulation or whatever. And that was pretty cool. I think when I'm looking at the game from where I'm sitting now, that the players had to figure out how to solve the plot in without using their fists, and that's a pretty cool mechanic, because if they use their fist and the killing of other vampires, the prince will come tumbling on them on a ton, like a ton of brick, right, and will kill them, because they are not, the players will never be the most powerful in the city or in the vicinity of the game where the game takes out. So that's a pretty cool setting restriction. So if you look at the players like that, and when I'm looking at other settings now, it's a very elegant way to do it, actually, for letting the players know it's not about fighting, it's about talking and allow to intrigue or allow to setting people up to fail or whatever. So what's your thought about that?
Well, I've never thought about it as some kind of meta constraint on the game, but I think it was. I think it's, maybe you answered something there.
Because we.
I really like also the traditions, as they're called, the constraints on how should Camarilla vampires shall conduct in the society. But I'm not 100%, maybe we are on the same line there, that the game do not about combat. I think that you can do a lot of things under, depend on the prince, of course, and who else in the city and the context. But because I have a lot of scenarios where there have been combat, have been a part of it, but it's, of course, the tradition in some way makes some constraints on what you can do. And I think, yeah, that's maybe a good idea if you want to make a scenario where this, where there also is about other things like relations and something like that.
Yeah, because that which I mean that's that it's not the first tool you will take up from your toolbox. It's not the hammer. It's your talking abilities, and that's where the meter restraints comes into play, I think. It's not the first choice for the players is to cut the head off the ignoring Ventru vampire. That's not the first thing that goes through their mind. Maybe they go through their mind, but they won't act on it because they know that this is the dangerous route to take. So they have to explore other routes before taking that extreme measure. That was my point about it, of course.
Yeah, I think it's a good thought. And also to those who listen now, that it is important to say that Vampire the Masquerade, in some way, it's about something hidden, or something that did not want to be revealed for humanity.
Yeah.
In that way, of course, they can God not murder in a row.
Yeah.
and there, yeah, in some way, that is a constraint, yeah.
So running this game, Lars, which things would you pinpoint at to be important for you if you had to run a game today, or if you would guide a new GM running this game?
If they want to play Vampire the Masquerade for the first time, I don't know if they should use second edition or some of the later edition revised, I will say will be the best. It's an edition coming a little later than the second edition, many years later. I think I will use that, or maybe the fifth edition that had been released for some years.
Yeah.
Is it fourth or fifth? It is fifth. Yes.
Yeah.
And I have played that. Maybe they should use that, but I know some other players who do not like it, but I think it was fine when I played
it. Fine.
So maybe take fifth edition and just use the rules as they like. But what I will do if none of them have played Vampire the Masquerade before, I will play as we did, play some sessions or one session with each player, or maybe them together where before they was embraced, and then play the embrace. This is like, I would say, when I played it, it was like it was a very extreme and fantastic role-playing experience when I was embraced, and my storyteller for the first time told me what happened to me the first time, the 3 drops of blood in my body that had been sucked dry, and how my body begin to change, and that transformation was extremely fantastic, and how I should handle the sunlight and the beast in me and all that. I will say to a new GM or new storyteller, play these scenes. It is fantastic experience to give to your players.
And maybe we are a place now that vampires are not that well known. If you are so lucky to pick up new players, I just picked up two new players that are our age. You met them both at VikingCon, and they were have never played roleplay as much as we have at all. And sitting down with players like that and give them this. This Anne Rice experience, maybe, or this surprise thing, because you can run this surprise thing, the embrace scenes so many times on the same group, and they would get bored.
So, that's important thing to say, that if people have played Vampire many times, I will never play the embrace. I think.
No.
So then there should be some kind of very important plot or thing that I will use in some way. But I think when I speak with my old buddies who played World of Darkness for many years, they did not like this. They do not want to play this transition again for human to some kind of beast, vampire, werewolf, or whatever. They are saying, I have tried that. I don't want to do it again. Yeah. But for new players, it is wow.
Yeah,
it is fantastic.
Yeah, it's cool, and it's funny to see that this is not a... You cannot reuse it. You can maybe differentiate it bits and make it some surprises and so on. But I played a dual GM game for a few years ago, actually, in Vampire, where we played in the 1800s in the US, where we played small sessions with each player just after they were embraced, to give them experience and get they have a sire. A sire is the person that created you, just to emphasize that somebody who listens to this doesn't know that, and have this small interaction with their sire as in a short scene, not embrace, but maybe a few months or maybe a year after they were created. So that was the different thing. And one of the players, actually, I cheated him. He created. I explained his character and la la la, and then he met this other guy, and that guy killed him, and that was the person that have to he should play instead. So that was pretty fun to see him get cheated in that way. That it was at another character that he didn't know he was should play instead. So me and my co-GM wrote all the characters, so that there wasn't any hook up to the players that are not used like 3 or 4 hours to create some character for us and whatever. It was us that gave characters to all the players, so that was easy for us to set these scenes up beforehand and run these prologues for each of the characters, and of course the goal with the prologues was to connect the three players together. We were two GMs and three players, so we had a lot of interaction in that regards. No, four players. We were four players and two GMs. So that's a pretty cool way to run the game, I think, for me. And
I've more than one time used two. We have been two storytellers,
yes.
Two GMs,
yes.
In Vampire or other storyteller settings. And when there are so many relations and people make split ups, party split ups, it is a good idea sometimes to have more than one GMs. And sometimes it can really make it a living world when you have all these things going on.
Yeah.
But of course, it can also be difficult to have the full information between the GMs. But that can be a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like these very important interaction with the sire to another character, so the players can talk to their sire or have with the prince or whatever, but while the other players are talking to some other NPC or beating up some poor fellow in a backyard to drain them for blood or whatever. So you can have two groups running simultaneous, so you don't have any waiting time for that. But also they can have these very deep thought talks without taking regards of the other players are aboard the hell out of their faces, right?
Yeah, and it is important in Vampire and other stories of things to have these small scenes where you take someone into somewhere in the street and suck their blood and describe the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you should remember the players that they should not split up all the time.
Yeah, no.
But make some scenes where you give them the time to describe how they will seduce someone and describe the feeling of the blood that flows into your mouth and all that. I think it is important, also one GM tool I will give the listeners here, that remember when you play Vampire the Masquerade to tell scenes where you really can remember that these characters are not superhumans, they're not superheroes, they are monsters.
Yeah.
With feelings, but describe they are vampires. Describe that you awake in the evening and you begin to hear the city sounds pulsing. Your senses are enhanced and you can feel your hunger when you wake up. And all these things, I think it is very important not to forget when you begin to play Vampyr and forget all about it when you dive into the lore of ancient vampires and Cain and everything. Remember to take your time and describe these things that you are a monster and your humanity is struggling with this beast inside you.
Yeah.
It should not be something that crippled the character's functionality, but just give them the feeling that they are this dark monster.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the fifth edition's version of the game gives a lot of tools into system-wise. As you said, there are some mechanicals that give some tools for the GM, so that the players also can remember this, but also let the players remember this and give the players room to describe this these feelings surrounding them and let the players be a part of the storytelling. And that's maybe some of the things I will give a new GM, as you said, the tools that give the players the room to explain how they feel and how their humanity is struggling and so on, because they are monsters, as you said. They are ravaging monsters that will kill and drain your blood and throw you in the garbage can they are not allowed because they have this masquerade and the Camarilla and all these things. But that's the beast nature for sure. When looking at the books again, Lars, and you, can you help us run through these seven clans and what the cool things with these seven clans are for you? And then we can pick some other clans outside the Camarilla to talk about them. Should we try to do this?
Okay. A bunch of the seven Camarilla clans.
Yeah, so the classic, when we pick up this book, the second edition book with the classic rose on, this is the seven clans, the seven classes, the seven races you can play. If you can, we'll go down the route of the D&D thing. Because when you pick up this book, you can see like, okay, we have seven classes or seven races or whatever we call them, because there's some, like, different things, but all the vampires are fairly equal, like in fighting thingy. But there are some of the clans that are better than fighting or better to manipulate people around them or even cast magic. So we have the Tremere that are the wizard, and we have the Nosferatu, they are the rogue, right? So, but how can we difference these clans, and what is so cool about these clans for you?
Well, one of the things that we like about the clans is they got different history.
Yeah.
The clans got some ancient history that go back to Cain. Some, yeah, they have not said what time before Christ he had lived, but let's just say that it is something like more than 6,000 years before Christ or something like that. And all of these clans have a history that goes back to some, that time or a very long time before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea that when you play this character, you can build on that. And probably it is not in port, but it is there. And the other thing that I like with the concept of the different clans is they have some kind of they have a concept or theme that you can build on. But also there is this golden rule that you should not follow 100% what a Malkavian is. Of course, there will be some kind of insanity or madness that the character is in their mind. But you can make a Malkavian that is very aggressive, like Brucia. So it's only clans are only guidelines and can give some interesting aspects to vampires that they are different. One of the important things.
Yeah, they are clans, so they are there is a these fractions. They are the seven fractions that are coexisting. They have some feuds going on across each other, and the books are pretty good of setting up these different hatred barriers between them, or love barriers between them, and giving some great nuance to all the characters. And you have the Nosferatu that are ugly and can move in the shadows and live in the sewers, and we have the Toreador that are gorgeous and beautiful and love art and all these things. So there's these are like the polar things, and then we have the Brujah that are like royalty-ish but are more brutish in the modern areas. And we have the Gangrel that are some like forest thingies and more in the touch with nature and the darkness in that regards, right? So there's a lot of different things in these characters that can be interacting with each other.
Every clan has a topic. Yeah. Ventures of the Kings, the Tremors of the Sorcerers, and that on.
Yeah.
But as I always said, it is the golden rule. There is no rule in storytelling. So if you want to be a Tremere, you're not necessary a sorcerer of some kind. You can make them a little more alternative. Mm. But of course, yes, they're clans. They are competing with each other. There are different groups that in Camarilla City, where the prince rules, there's a board where the representatives of the different clans sit and discuss the topics in the city. But again, the clans interact, so you can be a group together where one is a Tremere, one is a Ventru, one is a Malkavian, and they came together for some reasons. And especially in the 5th edition, I think they have made one very great thing. When you build up a group, they have some. You may, one of the important things that you need to have some focus the group, maybe on a more abstract level, but they have something that holds them together. And the 5th edition, it has a very good system where they help you running through this. So when you start up with a group with different clans, they can have something together. That so when there's just one story, what's one mission or whatever that can be resolved, they still have something that hold them together. And that I think is a great thing they've done there.
Yeah, the 5th edition have made this that many other games have adapted, maybe before or after. I don't know who figured this out, but create the group concept at first and then the characters. So you have this mission or this covent, and it's called in 5th edition, right? So it's the group's dynamic that are the key, and not the plot, or not the scenarios, or not the each of the characters, but the covent as such. And that's pretty cool idea. And it's very key for me when I'm looking at this from the outside, that we have 7 clans. We don't have 7 players, and we might have 2 players that want to play the same clan. And would those two be best buddy or hatred, or the concepts of the groups are pretty weird and so on. And we have something that called a caitiff, that a caitiff is like a vampire that doesn't know which clan they are. And I can remember back in the days that it was like a power gaming the clan, because they don't have any restrictions and they don't have any flaws and so on. Because each of the clans normally have this flaw that the Ventru...
Yeah, a weakness.
Yeah, the weakness, yeah. For the merits and flaws is something else, for sure, sorry. Yeah. And the Ventru only can only drain blood for somebody, and the Brujah can berserks more often and so on, and the Gangrel, when they go berserk, they give animal features and so on. So and the Nosferatu is like very ugly, so on. I can't even remember the Toreador's weakness right now. So
but all of those clans have inherited this weakness from their ancestors.
Yes.
What they call the third generation, the Antelubians. Yeah. And that is also where the even that your character doesn't know it, but the storyteller, or maybe also the player knows, that this goes back to the ancient history.
Yes.
So this is what many of the clans built on, some weakness that their ancestor, their founder, has been cursed or something like that.
Yeah. And that's pretty important to notice that, and giving these... Yeah, these small weaknesses, I don't call it flaws, because when we touch into the system and more crunchy part of the systems, there's something called merit and flaws, which power gamers love to build on. One of our common friends called Jens was, he was a hardcore power gaming when if you had this guy around your table, you know that this... That vampire character is it was a beast in any regards of combat, no matter what kind of clan or a concept he has built for the table, for sure. And that was always fun in some regards, but also you have to be a lookout for Jens and his very very cheesy characters for sure. I played a lot of him with him in the 90s, so yeah. And looking at these seven clans, one of the seven clans that also always have been a pretty weird for me is the Malkavian. Also because my D&D brain from back days can't put the Malkavian in any box. he didn't fit in any of the boxes. And when you're a new player, read this guy, okay, I have to play Cuckoo in the Cuckoo Nest. I just have to play weirdo kind of thing. But if you read one of the best written clan books for me is the Malkavian clan book, and it's just a cool riddle show where the primary protagonist in the book actually sets a trap for himself later in the book and so on. It was pretty cool, and figure out this. Giving these small quirks to your Malkavian character. We have a common friend called Christian Fick that accidentally died tragically in the late 90s, and we have played a lot of with him, and he had a Malkavian that lived in a freezer box. And that was his thing, and that you didn't need anything else for that character, actually, because that was pretty cuckoo in itself. And so what is your thought about the Malkavian? Because that's the odd one out, I think, in many regards, when you're looking at these classic vampires.
Well, I think when you need to play a Malkavian, you just need to remember they are sick in their minds. They have some kind of disorder, and which, if you know people or maybe yourself, it is not funny to have a disorder. It is a pain for you. And when you play a Malkavian, play the madness like it is a pain and not something that is funny. Maybe there can be some funny scenes that can come out of it, but it's not that focus. It is a curse that the Malkavians have because they have some kind of vision. There's like a what you call not prophets, like the Delphi girl, what it's called. They can see things that others cannot, but this also gives them some kind of madness. And so when you play a Malkavian, remember they are not clowns, they are sick in some way.
Yeah.
And some of their sickness can be for others funny, but it's not the point, I think.
No.
And you need to remember that it is a world of darkness. It is dark, but I know it can be difficult to play, so I will not say that.
No.
I absolutely recommend to play Malkavian, but I will just give them those tips from I just said here. And I played a Malkavian in Incrop, live action in Denmark, where I was a preacher for some some Christian group that is in Denmark, and was shovel head and a Sabbath member, and for me it worked fine, and I don't think that people saw me as a funny character.
No.
I think they saw me as a rambling lunatic, like a doomsday prophet or something like that.
A spooky character, because if you run a Malkavian like Hannibal Lecter kind of guy, it's my regards, or as you said, like a seer. That it's not funny clairvoyance acty kind of seer, but like hearing voices in a spooky way can be pretty cool, and it's one of the most difficult clans to play of all the clans, I think, for sure. And guiding your players, giving them the tools to play this kind of character is pretty hard, for sure. Because it's, as you said, it has to balance between the clown and the spooky clown, or not even haha clown, but it's like the it clown. It's fine balance for that, for sure. other clans you want to mention for the audience? Because for me, there's like the classic.
They're the classic ones we've just mentioned. Yeah.
And then there's the other classic, the old ones as well, that are not Camarilla, that are the keynotes in the antagonist guys, like in the Sabbath, because Sabbath is very hard to play for me. I don't know if you have any experience playing a Sabbath campaign, but...
I have played in live action role playing, and I also played some one shot scenarios. Yeah. I think, but the constraints about the tradition that we are taught about is nearly ripped away when you played Sabbath. So it is a different kind of play, I would think.
Yeah, because the Sabbath is like this notes that the vampires are the ruling race on Earth.
Yeah.
And wants to submit humans to bow for them as their blood gods, and they're just cattle and so on. So in all that regards, it often becomes very violent and very intense in that regard, and it's pretty hard for me to make a longer campaign or ideas, and often Sabbath are used as antagonist in a story. That's the way I'm using them normally, but also we have played a lot of Dark Ages, as you have, and I've played a lot of Dark Age as well, and there's some of the clans back then that are before the shift, it's like 1400s, right? Where there's the shift between the Camarilla and the Sabbath, they split up, and one of my favorite bad guy things, bad guy clans, are the Shemish. They are so intense and so visual.
And for the listeners, that Vatibus or Dracula is a Shemish.
Yes, in the lore, because they have also put in the lore, have put in a lot of historical characters and put them in the lore in some regards. There's, of course, Dracula, and there's a lot of other things. There's like a part of, I think it's the Ventru books that Hitler is a ghoul for the Ventrus and so on. And so it's actually the Ventrus that are really the Nazis and so on. And it's pretty gross kind of thing. I can't remember other historic characters that are really... There's like outline vampires or ghouls for vampires.
There's so many through the history.
Yeah, because but normally it's just ghouls, as that they are blood slaves of the vampire clans, and that's actually the blood the evil vampires that are pulling the strings behind Napoleon or Hitler or Stalin and so on and so on. Right?
Sometimes, but also characters like Rasputin, the Russian priest, he is many things, depending on what book you read.
Yeah.
Somewhere he's a vampire, somewhere he's a mage, somewhere he's something else.
Yeah.
So, but they use some of them, and they're not always ghouls, but sometimes the ghouls are just influenced by vampire powers or something else.
Yeah. And using these to dominate powers or presence powers.
Yeah, whatever.
And
I also think it is good to remember when you play Vampire the Masquerade that much of human history have been influenced by vampires.
Yeah.
They have been controlling human society behind the mask, behind the curtain. From also before the Masquerade was constructed or the tradition was arranged in ancient times, they ruled like gods in ancient Mesopotamia, but sometimes they were destroyed by the people under them or some other forces at work. But they have been there always and controlled human society, and cultures have been built by vampires and often destroyed by vampires.
Yeah. For instance, the Roman Empire. There's a long history about that, and how the true Brujas that live in Catania, right? Where they salted the entire thing to bury these losers under the sand and the salt, so they can never rise again, and so on. It's cool to see when you pick up these books, and some of the books are not very well written, but a lot of the books are pretty good and very gorgeous in art and aesthetics and so on. And as you said, if you have players that want to dive into the lore, there are so many layers. There's so many layers that like, and that's some of the, I love the World of Darkness setting as such, because there's so many things. There are, as you said, werewolf and mage and wraith and the mummies, and my favorites, that's the hunters, because sometimes we have to have an antagonist as a vampire in the vampire system, which are not vampires, and of course the Sabbat is a vampire antagonist, but we also have the hunters that want to kill off the vampires in some regards. We have werewolves. What are your favorites of all time? So when you building up these thing and connecting all these things in World of Darkness, you have to have these things in notice when you create a campaign, for sure. And that's a lot of info. There's a lot of books, and it can be, if you don't have a back catalog and a knowledge like you and me have, it's a hard sell for many players, because it's not very approachable at all. To know where to start and what to end, for me, if I look this from the outside and try to figure out this game from as a new GM or a new player, what's your thought about that?
Well, I think I will follow the tips I gave from some a little ago. Mm-hmm. That make a campaign that is inside a some kind of city. Mm-hmm. Not a too small city, because that would be strange that there's so many vampires in a very small city, but maybe a city with maybe 2 million people or something or larger.
Yeah.
And make some make that the scene, that make that the city, the sandbox where the characters can explore and get missions from for some people they meet, or the clans, or the princes, or whatever, and make this a sandbox where people can explore the city and explore it is to be a vampire.
Yeah.
That's the constraints I'll put on my first vampire campaign or session. Make it, make the borders of the sandbox very clear. Say we are working from inside this boundary, and here many things can happen. And make it a little open that the players can say, "I want to do this." And just remember, split parties can be difficult to play with only one GM. But
in any setting, have it in mind. That's true in any setting. So yeah. In contemporary,
but a sandbox, yeah. A sandbox city, because if you make it too much down the road, a linear story with where we roll the character, the players all the time in Vampire, it will destroy many of the good things about it. So I will make the story very open, but you can, of course, give them some very fast, some kind of plot or some kind of mission they need to do. But just give them, I will say, just give them time to play out that they have been embraced and what it is to be a vampire in a World of Darkness.
Yeah, but how would you approach this game to figure out the lore? Open that big box of goodiness, because there's a lot of cool things, but there's a lot of things in the new 5th edition. I've not read all of it. I've read the core book and the Camarilla book because I have Fire on last year. So she talked about it, and Martin that also created the book. But when we looked at this game, it was very, on the outside, just vampire. No lore, no... third generation Cain mythic Book of Nod, all that stuff, but if you want to pick up all the old stuff, because there's a lot of created like from the White Wolf area, how where to start, Lars. It's so much. There's so much info to read up on, and maybe you just shouldn't read up on it, or just improv, whatever.
Oh, well, there's many good sites of the internet, Wikipedia, and all that, where you can read about it. And of course, in any role playing setting, or if you write a book or whatever you do, to know, to have you make your research is extremely important, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also, if you choose to make your scenario in a Copenhagen or in a London or whatever, read about it before you start the game, just to have a feeling about the city.
Yeah.
You cannot know everything about London if you're going to play in that setting, but just have some understanding of it, maybe a little of the history. And the same with the vampire lore. Try to read what they have read in the core book, or if you want some more, go into the internet, but just take it easy and find out along the way what you need to do. And if you have a lot of time, read all the lore and see what you can use. But remember, do not forget about that vampire is, I will say, mostly about playing out what it is to be a vampire in a world of darkness. With all its, to be a vampire is a curse, but it's also something extreme for many individuals to be. So it's a journey in some way.
Yeah, and
a dark journey.
Yeah, a dark journey, and a monster in a human body. When setting up a game today, Lars, you have touched on a few of them, but if you want to run a game with your old group you're playing with sometimes. What would you focus on, and would you ever do this?
Well, I playtested Vampire 5th Edition with one of my old groups that I have known for many, 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 many years. And one of the players afterwards said that, oh, Lars, just say if you want to make it into a campaign, I would like to play it more. So even that he's an old role player and have played a lot of Vampire, he was into it still. Mm-hmm. So I think you can take it up again. There's been some years ago, and maybe you can make a new history, a new story. Yeah. And I would say, if I should make a new story, I think I will make what I said before, make a sandbox setting with a city or something like that, where there's these relations and conflict between them. And I would really try not to use that much time on the ancient lore. I will say to myself, the scenes in this scenario should be about emotions, about relations, something that you can achieve in some way, and that should be the primary goal.
I will
do that still, and I could. I don't think that I will play Vampire with my old friends, but if I met a new group that have never played Vampire before, it will be so exciting for me to tell a story where they was embraced for the first time, and that will be so great just to use that again for some to tell a story to some players there about that.
Yeah, as I said, I've met some new players, and I'm figuring out how to present different kind of games for them. I just played Aliens with them, and that was wow. And maybe Vampire is the next on the list, but yeah, these aha experience, that's, it's so cool to have this with your players for sure. And as you said, setting up a game, I tried to set up a game like a few years ago where we said in the 80s in Atlanta. One of my players had to move to another part of Denmark, so we have to cancel the campaign for that. Was pretty sad, but character focused and sandboxy, and the covens from 5th edition, these are the key for me when if I should run a game again in this setting or this system. For sure, because it's about the players. It's not about the story as such. It's the players that interact with the story in some regards, as it's often are. But in Vampire, I think it's more personal horror, a term we haven't used today at all, because it's personal horror gaming. It's not horror, as in cult or as in Væsen or something like that. You are the monster. You are declining. You are declining into inhumanity, and that's actually the struggle and actually the game's premise, that you are swirling down in the drain of darkness and personal horror, and maybe the game is about to hold on to the humanity, or maybe the game is about to let go of humanity, and you see what kind of monster you are really are when the beast let go.
I would say I follow you most of the way, but I will just say that as a game tool, if people are going to play a vampire campaign, in some way down the road, when you have played nearly only these emotional scenes, it will maybe be without too much, that there needs to be some kind of goal, I think, some sessions. Yes. Or probably also in the first session, just have some background story going on with some meta plot or something that can make some direction in the game. Because people also need to remember that it is storytelling. You are trying to tell some kind of story. And I will also, if I made this sandbox in some kind of city, whatever this city is, have some kind of main conflict going on in the city, or a main conflict that starts when the characters come to the city or embrace for the first time, whatever. So they can dive into this plot if they want to, or without too much railroading, gives them some mission they can maybe gather around in some way.
And flesh out a lot of NPCs, give them a lot of a lot of characters they can interact with, both human or ghouls, and of course vampires, maybe some other things in the World of Darkness if you are experiencing that sort of things as you are, Lars. You can give them a lot of nods in direction. One of my favorites, actual plays, is Boston by Night by the Tale Weavers, Katrine Rasmussen, that I have on a few months ago. She is GMing that and are so cool too. She's a professional tattoo artist and draws exceptional. So she have drawn all her NPCs, so the characters can see them, and they can see that what kind of person these characters are. If you don't are expert draw like Katrina, you are expert the draw. So, but figure out how to find some cool pictures on the internet. Don't use AI art, but find some cool art on the net. If you're not, of course, releasing this
I would say that's a good idea to make a mind map of some of the most important characters in the player's
vicinity,
and maybe make very clear who is the prince or
the seneschal and the sheriff and
all these. Have an idea who it is, maybe write down the names, and if you can do that, have some art that with the main characters in the character's history, it would be great. I did that when I made run my vampire my Azamite campaign for 7.5 years. I think I made over 100 small drawings, an artist myself, so I made with ink. I made all these characters and tried to map some of them with hijab and all that, because it was in the Middle East and whatever they have on their heads, and made a lot of different characters there, and that I think that my players will love those pictures, but it was also a extremely large work. And so you need to be understand where do you want to use your energy when you make a scenario. Do you want to use a lot of time finding pictures of characters, or do we want to make a good mind map, or do you want it all? You cannot do everything. So
it's a
good idea to have pictures.
Yeah. So if everybody wants to see some great vampire gaming, Tale Weavers, I will link it in the podcast. Katrina is a wild GM. She's fucking excellent. So creating this game slug. So what do we miss about this game, Lars? What is when you slump back in the chair and look back on the happy 90s, what do you miss for looking back on this game?
Well, my vampire, my Azumite campaign was from the run from 2001 or 2 or something. Yeah. So it was not in the '90s.
Yeah,
it
ran
for like
but we picked 7 years up this game in the 90s.
But yes, we picked it up. Yeah, that was for many the golden age, and where the hype was most extreme.
Yeah.
But when I look back at Vampire the Masquerade, it is probably the setting or on the game that I have used most time with.
Yeah.
In competition with Werewolf the Apocalypse, that is my probably. That's another story, probably my largest love of any setting or theme. But it's a love for me. It's many good memories down the road. So
and that's also
in the future. I will make a new story in it or something. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, there's also another game that has this decorum of. In World of Darkness, where the players are lumped into to behave without using violence as the first resource in a conflict. It's such a cool way to that have written these games that are focused on the on role playing and not how to rip each other apart. Both werewolves and werewolves can rip each other apart for sure, but it's not the first thing you go to in the toolbox, as we talked about before, and Werewolf has the same decorum for me to see from the outside, right?
Was that a question?
No, it's just a constatation that's because it's just so elegant the way a mage has the same kind of decorum thing. And because the paradox will come if you're using your powers in the wrong way, and in the Wraith you will be sucked down into the dark oblivion if you use your powers in a different way and in the wrong way and so on. So there's so many cool ways that the White Wolf authors make sure that the players think into the setting that they are not violent. They are not created to make violence in the conflicts as the first option. They can use the violence, and they are very powerful if they want to use it, but it's not the first answer to each conflict. And werewolf and vampires are specific in this for sure, when looking out the outside. But as for vampire, yeah, it's just cool to have this in-game mechanic and this power struggle that players have to figure out how to use their powers in other ways than ripping each other faces off, as they will do in Dungeons & Dragons, for example. If there's an obstacle, you will grab your sword as a paladin and chop the face off the necromancer. So why don't we play this game anymore, Lars? Because Aliens is much better, or... No.
Aliens, the role-playing game from Free League, is absolutely fantastic in many ways.
But
you can play it. Everybody can play Vampire again, I think, if they just want to like the setting or the story, the rules, of course. But why we don't play it? I think I could play it again if one of my friends come and said, I want to make this Vampire one-session scenario or campaign. And I know that the GM is a good GM, and the other players, I think, could make a good story together. I think I will play it again without doubt.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. But there are so many other games out there that, of course, I could also play. So it depends a lot about who are the GM, who are the other players, and what are the concept we're going to play.
Yeah.
Or I would say, okay, I'm into it. But I think that... Even though I have played so many stories in different times and in different countries and all that, there are still stories to tell. So why not?
Yeah. As I said, I tried to run a game like a few years ago, and some of my one of my groups in my local area here, they have played some Vampire back in the days, but they have. It was fun to see it. I didn't know them back in the 90s, and when I sit down with those, they played as a Dungeons & Dragons scenario. They made powerful characters, and they knew they were just supermen or superheroes with teeth. And that was, I have to unlearn that from them. They have to be formed into what Vampire was for me and what the Vampire setting want to accomplish. And that was one of my problems with this setting, that it's very difficult for new players to sit down and understand it as new players, but also as players that have played a lot of other role-playing games and figure out how to sell that this is not about dungeon crawling in a city. It's actually about a personal horror game and the decline of humanity and so on. I've played with a group that I made this 1988 thing, and it was clear to me that if I didn't create the characters for the players, they just created like superhero character with teeth, and picking up this game and try to play it with another group, I have to unlearn a lot of things from the players have to unlearn a lot of things for me to give them a great experience. So especially if I sit down with experienced players that have played Vampire before or played a very little Vampire, or even worse, play Vampire as they think they would play Vampire, I have to make them unlearn a lot of things, and that could be a lot of work for nothing for me. And it's and again, we haven't talked about this system as much. We were fond of the system in the beginning, but as you spoiled a bit, this system is very crunchy, especially the old one, because there is a lot of like merits and flaws, as we talked about. There is combat in this system is a hellhole, as this makes Dungeons & Dragons look like a fairy tale. It's so difficult to figure out, and there's so many roles and so many things that moves up and ups and downs. It's not cool. So what's your thought on the system and how to figure this out as new players and
well, of course, yeah, the first, second edition version of Vampire and Revised and was absolutely not balanced. And there was many, there is or still maybe, a lot of bad things about how the system are arranged. I would say, yes, there have been problems for me sometimes when I have made, was a story tell that the system is so little, has no balance, but they have tried to fix it, but they in the system, in new editions, but when they fix it, they made new problems. So that's maybe the greatest flaw of Vampire, that is the system, that it is not balanced, and there are something in the system that make it players you're playing with. So if you have power maxes, of course, it's a problem. If you are not, it's fine.
Yeah, it's power maxing is also always a problem, and many systems try to mitigate that, but sometimes you just have to have players around your table that are not power maxing, or you create the character for the players system-wise and just shut up and play the character, because that's no, your character don't have 5 dots in whatever stat.
I must say a dark secret for me. One of my absolutely things I most hate when I play is that people paramax. It turns me off in a bad way and brings forth the most darkest aspects of me as a GM. I begin to compete with them, and I'm the GM, so
yeah, you win.
I win, and in some way, this Power Maxer player, he just feels like he's like violated in some way.
Yeah,
and I have nothing that have violate people that much, but I can remember one or two times when it happened, and I will handle it a lot better now, but it brings really forth something bad in me because I really think I hope that we have this contract that we are here for the story, and sometimes, mostly, I would say, you can experience that people are not there for the story.
No.
They are there for something else. They are maybe there for the game, for the social aspects of the game or something, or for the plot. I can handle if they're there for the plot and not there for the role-playing. But you really need to be aware of that. And Power Max is a problem everywhere, in my opinion.
It's a problem. And one of the... Yeah, again, back to Free League's games, that's so easy not to Power Max in that game. But in this system, there are so many options for a player. So many ways to figure out how to be the best fighter or best user of magic or whatever, and of course combat is just such a shit show because there are so many roles, and it will take a lot of the evening out of the fun. I have this rule, for lack of other words, that the rule of three: a combat is stopped after three rounds. Of some reason that it's the combat ends in some capacity, and that's for all my games, not only Vampire.
Well, that's as a GM tool, that could be a way to handle that, that the combat do not take that much time. But it's but I will say that if you do that, it can be a total turn off for some players, as we just mentioned before. If people are there for the games, the system, and want to win or just explore the system and see, and you just say after three rounds you cut the scene and say, and now you survive or you need to flee or something like that, some people can be extremely turned off that. So if you do that, you really need to be clear in your session zero or something like that, that I will cut combat very short.
Yeah, yeah, and combats at and but then you are back to a session zero, and that's relevant to all games for sure. But especially especially when the genre is so hard to see from the outside as Vampire is, because you are monsters and you have big claws and you have a lot of, if you look at the all the what it's called, traditions, no, what disciplines, they're called disciplines,
the dark powers, the vampire,
yeah, the vampire has, powers, yeah. The disciplines, these are always almost always focused on combat in some capacity. There are very few of them that are not usable in combat in some capacity. There are some want to sneak, there are some to make some claws, there are some where you can dominate some person, you can make them crawl with presence and whatever. And a lot of these are not relevant outside combat, actually. And when you then you pick this up and like, okay, so I'm creating this character that are very competent in combat, but we will never fight. Well, what is going on here? And then I'm, as a GM, cutting you short after three rounds. Then you can be mad at me as a GM, but it's not relevant for me. Combat is not the important thing in this game. But if you look at the system like in a vacuum, system-wise, this is a very crunchy fighting system. All the disciplines are relevant in combat in some capacity, more relevant than others. But in a vacuum, this is what the system is. It's a fighting system. So how and this is very important for a session zero, that players have to understand this. This is not a fighting setting. If you get my drift.
I think I understand what you mean. Yeah, that. I'm just saying that some players will not like it, but of course you need to choose your players.
yeah, of course, and we will navigate outside around these players that are very power creepy and so on. But back in the early days of the we played, we haven't got that choice, and we maybe have a play group of five or four players, and two of them are power player ish, and you just have to handle them in some capacity, and we have the training in that, but other GMs might not have that training and might have a bit better rule, don't have the rule mastery in this game. As I said in the beginning, you as a GM has to have a very high rule mastery in this game, but as a player, you don't need a very high rule mastery. So that's one thing you have to be aware of when picking this game up.
Yeah, I think you're right in that. But depends on your players always. And if they're new to the setting, and you just take it easy with it, I think. But of course, with people who have played it many times and know all the pitfalls in the system and what they can do with it, and that's always a problem when they use it and not just meet what the character that would be great for the story. It's a lot different than you when you play Dungeons & Dragons and things like that, and many other games. I think that people should understand that Vampire is more about storytelling than playing a game. But of course, people should do what they want.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Kulas, I thank you for helping me in the solo workshop. I might call you up in another segment. My next project is West End Game Star Wars, so I can.
Oh, one of my love.
Yeah, so
one of my. One,
yeah, okay. I'll call you up again. Then I can hear.
Do that. Yeah. That's a great mini great hours.
I just played a short campaign actually for a few months ago. That was pretty fun to pick that game up again. It works again. It actually works.
It do. Yeah.
It has made it through the decades very well, actually. And the system is, of course, again, I have the rule of three, so combat in that system is also very long, lengthy, if you don't know what you're doing as a GM. But as a rule of three, I have in combat, it's fine. And we didn't have any ship combat, so that might be my takeaway from this campaign, that we missed that, because I remember that was a horror show and took a very long time to figure out how to come in through a battle with three TIE fighters and two X-Wings and a UT 1300 and with a 1300 and so on. So yeah.
I'd be very glad to support you and talk about that, but just say that it holds a very special place for me.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous system for sure. That's a date, Lars. We'll talk to that. For sure. But thanks for helping me understanding Vampire and delivering something and talk about nostalgia for us for sure.
It was a great great pleasure to talk with you again about it.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for this, Lars. And next time we will talk with Lars, maybe just solo, about West End Game Star Wars. It's for surely with Lars, so who am I kidding? He helped me a lot on this one, so we're going dual GMing again. So listen in. Follow us on Facebook, GM Workshop, the podcast. If you want to interact with us and talk to us, give us a message.